thousands of bullets, lost judgment. My own sweet time didn't teach what I found. I didn't recognize simple things anymore. I don't wanna be defeated. I don't wanna be defeated. I don't wanna be defeated. I don't wanna be defeated.
Hello. Hello. La la la. What's up, everybody? Shane here. I'm back. Another episode of the show, the podcast, Lead Singer Syndrome. Thanks for joining me on this fine Wednesday afternoon. A little bit of show business. First off, I am going to switch the show to Wednesday officially. I know I've been late the last few weeks, and basically just the way that my life is structured right now, Tuesdays kind of don't work for me. So I'm going to switch the show to Wednesdays. Wednesdays are the day. And I don't know, I feel like it's good. It's a nice little pick-me-up in the middle of the week, you know? Just, it's going to be great, okay? Wednesday's the new Monday, which was the new Tuesday, which was before the new Friday. Yes, you got it. We're in. But hey, welcome to this week's episode, and a bit of a different one, and I love that. Because the name of the show is Lead Singer Syndrome. It isn't lead singer of emo band or hardcore band or punk band or rock band or whatever syndrome. It is just lead singer syndrome. And I have always said that it doesn't matter what genre, what walk of life anyone comes from. If they're a lead singer, they got a story, they're welcome to be on this show. A few weeks ago, we had Tiffany, the pop star from the 80s. She's still around. That was a great episode. We've had people like Mattis Yahoo before on the program. And of course, tons of rockers. But this week, we have our first emo rapper, Dying in Designer, Bobby. He's here. And it's a great episode. And it's cool to get a little bit of different insight on what it's like to be a lead singer when you're just a solo artist and you work with producers and other collaborators, and you're not necessarily in a four-piece or a five-piece rock band. So this is a very cool episode, and if you don't know about Dying in Designer, you better get on that. This dude is blowing up, amazing music, really great, cutting edge, modern, but cool, but timeless. It's really great. So yes, you will learn some shit today. I guarantee it. Before we get into that, I want to let you guys know, as always, you can get in touch with me if you want to. You can email me, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. Feel free to add me to social media, at Shane Told, at leadsingersyndrome, at leadsingersyn, depending on which one you're on. Does anyone actually do that? You just search and it comes up. So just search, it comes up, it's all good. In other news with me, I got my new glasses from Iconic. .com. That's EYECONIC.com/LSS. That's the link you're going to want to visit. These are my homies. They hooked me up. My vision, as I've said for the past few weeks, it wasn't great. Now I have glasses. And let me tell you, I haven't worn glasses regularly my whole life. And this is like, pardon the pun, eye-opening. Really, it truly is. I want to thank them so much for all the love they've given me, the show, being an amazing sponsor. And if you wear glasses or contacts, or if you think you need them like me, check out iconic.com/LSS. And there's promo code 2 to save 10% off LSS. And you will hear an ad later in the program and in all the programs if you listen to old episodes, because that's what we do now. It's awesome. So thanks to iconic.com. Thanks to rockabilia.com, of course. For all your band merch needs, check them out. Only one thing left to plug, and that is the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. Shout out to all my sinners worldwide. Y'all are awesome. Y'all keep the lights on around here. That's right. Without the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club, I would not be able to do this week after week, bringing you great content. So yeah, just check it out.
Yo, the man. Link, how you doing?
LeadSingerSyndrome.com/All Access.
Wonderful. It's nice to talk
to you. It costs as little as $6 a month. You get bonus episodes, bonus content, interaction with me, and you get to be a part of the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club family, which is 350 members strong, and you're going to make some friends. So check it out. It really does help me out big time. LeadSingerSyndrome.com/All
access. If you like the show, write a review on iTunes, preferably 5 stars. Tell a friend, tell a loved one. That all is so sick. And that's it. That's my intro. So let's get into it. Here is my conversation with Bobby, aka Dying in Designer.
Yo,
man. How you doing?
Good, man. How's it going?
I'm wonderful. It's nice to talk to you.
Yeah, man. It's been a minute. Couple weeks, months, maybe?
It's been, yeah, not too long. I saw you in Chicago, which was, yeah, I guess it was a while ago, actually. Yeah, it was a couple months ago.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, yeah, well, you've been busy.
Yeah, fuck it. Yeah, it's been pretty busy, man. You guys, too.
Yeah, no, we just got back, and it was a great tour. You know, nice to have some time off. But damn, dude, you new album, Nobody's Happy. It's out. Finally out.
Finally, man. Fucking damn. Stoked.
And what was funny, I thought, was you just put out this record. You know, you've been working on it for so long. Debut album, all this stuff. And I'm like, yo, man, I'm just texting you a minute ago, being like, hey, man, I'll just filling up my coffee. I'll call you in a second. And you're like, yeah, man, I'm just recording some like melodies into voice notes. So let me get this straight. You're already working on new stuff?
Yeah, crazy. So I constantly record, and I was putting together like this little Dropbox for Paul, and I already had like 15 ideas in there.
Oh wow!
Just like from just actually a lot of them are like full songs, but there's a lot of stuff that I haven't had the chance to like record into like my computer studio. So I was just recording like a lot of the memos, kind of adding them to the Dropbox. So yeah, it never stops, man. I got a ton of ideas for album two already.
Wow, that's cool. Yeah, and you mentioned Paul. Paul is the drummer of Silverstein, who also happens to be your manager, Mr. Manager, as I call him. That's awesome, man. Yeah, it's crazy, right? Like, on this podcast, I was thinking about it, and you know, most of the time, the singers that I talk to, they're either, you know, in a band, or they're solo artists, but they're like, you know, it's like them and a guitar kind of solo artists, or they used to be in a band. What you do is completely different from that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a cool process because the work doesn't stop. And like, you know, Paul calls me a machine. Like I'll send ideas. I'll send ideas. He'd be like, you fucking machine. Like just because we'll have like different producers. Like I work with Tampa, who you guys are, you know, good buddies with and have brought on tour. And he works very closely with my buddy Arjun, who produced a ton of like the drums and stuff like that on the first album. So those two work really close. And then I have a guitarist here, Bodie, who goes by Hooligan.
Yep.
And he's constantly working on shit. And then, you know, we'll get, you know, when I end up doing sessions with, you know, other people out in LA or wherever else, we end up making songs. So just the work just doesn't stop.
Yeah, it's a different kind of collaboration, I guess, right? Like instead of, you know, I'm in a band with 4 other people and that's who I always collaborate with. It's like you almost have... It's kind of endless, right? Because it's like your band just can be like dozens of people.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, tons of people, man. It's crazy. It's like everybody's working in different corners of the world. Like Arjun's in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Yeah.
Tampa's in Toronto. Bodie's here, but the crazy thing about Bodie, me and Bodie only wrote, one song on the album together, like in the same room. So I would just send like vocals or reference beats and, you know, kind of things I make over to him. And then he would kind of just build off what I send. So we've actually only made one record together, like sitting in the same room. And then we actually just wrote one recently together. So yeah, it's just kind of weird. The work, I end up doing a lot of this stuff actually kind of alone.
Yeah.
Which is pretty depressing, but also cool.
So let me get this straight. This guy's name is Bodie, like Point Break Bodie?
Well, his last name, His real name's okay. Nick. But
Nick, okay.
It's Baudet, but he goes by Bodie, like that's his name.
Yeah.
But his producer name's Hooligan.
Yeah. See, if I had any way that I could call myself fucking Bodie, like the coolest character in the history of movies, dude. Come on.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck my God.
Ugh. Yeah, it's a sweet name.
And he had to, and he switched to Hooligan. Hey, whatever, man. He can do him. That's cool. Well, I mean the guitar playing. You know, I just listened to the whole record for probably the third or fourth time now, all the way through since it came out. The guitar playing really is a theme throughout the record. It gives it a tone that I think you don't always find in your genre. You know what I mean? It's like constantly there, kind of setting the tone for like the, you know, the pain that, you know, you kind of feel in your voice. Yeah. Is that something that obviously that's important to you? Are you a guitar player too, or do you just kind of guide him? How's that work?
So a little kind of background. So I met Bodie through a mutual friend, Bodie Hooligan. We'll just call him Bodie. So now everyone on the podcast knows it's Hooligan. But he played guitar in majority of the stuff. But I met him through a mutual friend when I started this Dying and Designer project early on, and he was going through like a super shitty relationship as well. And, you know, we just got really tight and music was our outlet to kind of, you know, get our emotions and like kind of feelings and shit we were going through out.
Yeah.
So I'd send stuff to him and he'd know exactly what to do. And, you know, he grew up pop punk kid and, you know, post hardcore and shit like that. So a lot like me. So it was just real easy. It was like, you know, send it, not too many revisions. I mean, like the one song that took a kind of a while was Devil's Calling. We probably went through like 50 revisions. He was like so pissed. We were in the studio. He literally was like, I'm going to throw my fucking guitar through this wall.
Damn.
And then, you know, we were like, all right, we got this. And he came back. Like we took like a break for a second. He came back and just laid the prettiest shit. And he was like, I was like, see, motherfucker. It's worth it. Like he's like, fuck this song. Like it was pretty funny, but we got through it and ended up actually being the first song we released with Hopeless Records. So
yeah,
it's an important one.
Absolutely. And well, congratulations on the signing to Hopeless. I mean, a label that is near and dear to my heart. I mean, not only a label that I was assigned to myself for three albums, but one of my favorite record labels growing up. And you know, Hopeless Records has a rich history of, you know, mostly punk rock. But of course they have, you know, they have reached out to a lot of different genres, but you know, you were the first, you know, call it emo rap, artist to sign. What was that like? There must've been some haters.
Yeah, no, it's definitely interesting because they've never actually released a project with any type of hip hop influence. And, so kind of coming in, like obviously there's going to be the people that don't understand it because we're kind of like it's a new wave, you know. It's
sure
obviously like, you know, influence from my upbringing and stuff like that, but it's also kind of a mix of a lot of things. And I think some people just didn't understand it right away, but the people that really do, like the core cult following fans of Dying and Designer, like really are crazy about it. So I think, you know, all the other people are starting to come around, you know, like the people that didn't get it, because it's a great record and I'm, you know, super happy that we put it together and, there's nothing I would change about it. So.
No, I mean, there's definitely, you can tell listening to the record, there's punk rock influence in there. The songs are short. The melodies are very pop punk that could be found on, you know, let's think of the other bands that Hopeless has put out, like maybe All Time Low or something. You know what I mean? Like they're very indicative of that style. So it totally works. I think that sometimes people get lost in the fact that there's no pounding drums and there's no palm muting guitars. Well, there is a little bit of palm muting guitars. That's not true. But you know, I think that people get lost in that when really they just need to see that the ethics of punk and the passion is definitely there.
Yeah, you know what I found really funny? So when we released Devil's Calling, like AP, like I think was the first to like break the article.
Yeah.
And they were like, emo rapper Dying and Designer signs to Hopeless Records. And the funny thing about my album, I think I only rap on three songs. And Devil's Calling, the song we released, I did not. It was all melodies.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right.
The only thing that had some hip-hop influence would be like the 808s and trap drums. Everything else, though, was like, it's like a pop punk record, you know? It was like kind of spilling my heart out, trying to move on from, you know, past shitty relationship.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, and did what was the feedback on that? Because obviously, alternative press is a big outlet. A lot of people are following that aren't necessarily following Hopeless Records or following your stuff. Did you feel like that gave you new fans? Just bring on the YouTube comments of "fuck this guy" or you know what
no,
I mean?
No,
there's obviously both sides are going to happen.
Yeah, the funniest comment though that you bring up YouTube comments. Someone commented, they're like, "This is the trap Tom DeLong." I was dying. I thought it was the funniest fucking thing. Like, and that's kind of like a funny way to put it, but you know, kind of true. It's like melodies, you know, over trap drums and like pretty guitars. And we got a lot of good feedback, you know, like that song did really well and way more likes than dislikes. And, you know, people really cared about it. And, you know, I just think the few people that didn't get it, we'll get it eventually, and when they do,
yeah,
it's gonna be sick. And then it'll be like, "Damn, I should have not hated on that."
No, that's funny. The comparison to Blink 182, and I do hear it. I think like the melodies for sure, and especially you know some of the new stuff that Blink's doing, where it is kind of like you know Travis Barker's always done a lot of hip hop influence stuff. Like some of the stuff you do,
crazy thing. People don't even realize like. That all like their favorite artist, like A Day to Remember, their new single, there's like trap drums and bass, and same with like the new Blink or like
a ton of these
artists, pop artists, been doing this. There's no real drums in pop songs, so it's like I just think the emo rapper thing, like saying, "Oh, this is an emo rapper," had people like, "Oh wait, fuck this rap stuff, what
right.
is this?"
Right,
you know.
Well, a lot of people are scared of what they don't know too, right? I mean, there's a fear of this unknown. There's a fear that, I don't know why, it's not like your music is going anywhere, you know, but people want to say, "Oh, this is something different and new and I don't want to like it," when really people should just be open-minded because I love your record. So,
fuck yeah.
You know, and I'm not a guy that's like on the cutting edge of new genres and trends and like, "Oh, this is like going to be cool in 2020. I better listen to it now." Dude, I still listen to like a lot of music from 1994.
No, exactly.
I really enjoy it.
Music.
Sorry, go ahead.
Know, and that's the thing, like making timeless music. Like,
yeah,
this record here, you know, it's like 2 years of my life were, you know, really shitty and I was going through some shitty shit, but, you know, trying to make the best out of it and kind of, the music became really therapeutic for me. And, you know, I think a lot of people feel this way. And I think, you know, pretty much everyone in the world went through like, you know, go through shitty relationships or went through. And I think it's something people are going to be able to put back on and relate to, you know, for the rest of their life. And that's, you know, why we chose to do an album. You know, they're like, "Oh, you know, you can release singles and this and that." I'm like, "No, I grew up on albums. I grew up going to the CD store, carrying, you know, a Walkman around and bumping CDs. Front to back, and that's what nobody's happy is. This record is a front to back record.
Yeah.
That I hope's timeless, you know, for people and, you know, kind of lasts a lifetime.
No, I actually have it in my notes here. You know, I have this right here just written down. I wrote, "It seems like you have all these songs firing all at once at different things. Like your song Promises is on satellite radio. Lately is crushing it on Spotify." And I was going to ask
Lately's
you.
Yeah, Lately's actually getting play on satellite radio right now too, which is
awesome.
Crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's, and I just was going to say, this was my question, I guess I wrote down, was, do you think that plays to the strength of this whole album? It's not just one single with a bunch of other tracks kind of as filler. You know, it seems like this is a well-crafted album from start to finish. It has the peaks and valleys, you know, that you know, you used to talk about like a CD that you put in a Discman, you know, like it has that element to it, which you don't get a lot in, you know, 2019.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the thing, like, so we released a few singles before we announced that we were releasing an album, and all the singles, you know, they're getting playlisted and satellite radio and this and that and that. And then, you know, I was talking with my guy, Josh, who, you know, handles a lot of the stuff, you know, with the placements and stuff like that at Hopeless. And he was saying, yeah, you know, we're going to lead, you know, bands, artists lead with like one single. And we led with Wounds. But the crazy thing is, like, a bunch of other records are getting picked up and thrown in playlists that weren't even pitched or anything. So it's super cool that it's being listened to. And, you know, that's, you know, the purpose of the album. I was like, really? Like, only one record's going to be shopped? And it's so cool to see that everything else getting picked up all over.
Yeah, totally. I think like Down and Out was a strong track when I listened to the record the first time. Like that, you know, that's one that kind of jumped out at me. And that's one that isn't, you know, people aren't really talking about it, but it's a great song.
Yeah, no one's talking about it, but it's getting playlisted, which is super cool. It's getting a lot of pop punk playlists. So
that's awesome.
Super stoked on that one. And honestly, just the whole record. And just been getting a lot of feedback, like this record Highs, it's a pretty deep one. And that's like become like, I think like a fan favorite that we didn't really expect. So it's super cool just dropping a whole body of work and seeing what people gravitate to.
Absolutely, man. So I want to talk about you, the guy, Bobby O'Brien. And I know you're from Chicago, but you know, as a new artist, I think a lot of your fans probably don't know that much about you. So can we talk about that? How did you grow up? I know you didn't have a lot of money. And I know you moved to LA for a while to do some stuff. But before that, you know, how was it? What were you like growing up as a kid? Did you have brothers and sisters and all that?
Yeah, so grew up on the south side of Chicago near this place called Midway Airport. And
it's a place I've been to. I've been delayed there for several hours before.
Haven't we all, man? But so I grew up, you know, playing sports, video games, any normal kid, but I always was like into punk rock and, you know, post-hardcore, hardcore, deathcore, you name it. You know, my mom had me really young, 21, so she had real good taste in music. So she put me on to, you know, a lot of the early stuff, you know, I grew up on. So
what were some of the records she was spinning? Like, was she spinning around the house or whatever?
Oh man, like Slipknot, Korn, Pearl Jam, like Matchbox 20, like Three Doors Down, like all kinds of stuff.
Right,
she put me on to literally everything. She had so much, you know, she was like a rocker chick, punk rock, you know, grew up on alternative music and stuff like that. So as a kid, you know, I was big into it and I used to go to school. My mom, you know, she had me as an only child, and then, you know, later, you know, now I got a stepdad and stuff like that. But so we used to really bond. She used to work like, I don't know, 30 minutes from her house. And I went to a little Catholic school called BCA, Bridgeport Catholic Academy. But I used to get dropped off at a babysitter's house. And the babysitter had a son named Bobby as well.
Oh, yeah.
But he was big into like the Slipknot, the Korn, the Papa Roach, like the heavy stuff. So, you know, going there every day, like, you know, get all the posters and stuff like that. They had MTV on every single day. So I really started liking some of the real heavy stuff, like at a young age. So, you know, growing up, I don't think like, you know, I always wore band tees and like studded belts and fucking Vans and shit like that. I don't think the kids in my grammar school really got that. And because of that, you know, like I didn't fit in with like the jocks or the preppy kids. I was kind of like an outsider. I was kind of like alone, you know?
Right.
So music was always like that, you know, kind of like my thing. And I don't think it's a lot of people's thing, to be honest, at least growing up as a kid, you know? And, you know, same thing. Like when I went to high school, I was playing in like hardcore deathcore bands, pop punk bands. And, you know, I was friends with a few kids at the school that were into that stuff, but not a lot of people. All my other buddies were like, I met through like MySpace and shit like that.
So were you doing vocals in these bands, like singing, screaming, or were you playing an instrument? What were you doing?
Yeah, I was singing and I started a few pop punk bands, never really went anymore. And then I was like 15 and I started this like hardcore deathcore band and we were called Victory at All Costs. And I met who's my current like tour manager, super close buddy. We write songs together now. He's wrote on a couple songs with me on the album. Steve, I met him actually through MySpace, and we formed this band. We formed this band, and we like recorded in actual studios and like had some really fucking sick stuff going on. Like the drummer I went to high school with, and then we found other members on MySpace, and we formed this super sick hardcore kind of deathcore band, and we opened for some pretty cool people, and you know, it went kind of well. And then, you know, I kind of got kicked from the band.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, for like another vocalist or something. So it was kind of like whatever. So I started like kind of rapping randomly because my high school, you know, a lot of the kids were rapping. It was more urban school in the city. And I was like, fuck, I still want to do music. You know, I filled in for a few other bands, like a band I think that's still around, I Killed Everyone and shit like that. But I was like, oh, I still want to do music. So I started kind of rapping and kind of, you know, went out to LA, you know, sold out the House of Blues in Chicago, did some tour stuff with some people under a different name. And I was like, you know, going through this relationship, and that's when I combined the two sounds together. And I was like, you know, why not combine them? I'm going through this shit. And that's kind of how Dying Designer.
What was the old project called?
I don't know if I want to share it. People are going to find it. Like, I kind of want to keep that set aside.
That's fine. I mean, if you sell out the House of Blues,
I mean, there's definitely lots of plays on the shit and stuff. So like people, like the core fans from like a long time ago, definitely know, okay. Know me from it. So I get DM. So like if they DM me and then find it, cool. But I think I want to like,
hey, you can keep this close to your chest, but I'm going to tell you right now, someone listening to this is like already opening a second web browser.
there's plenty of people that know about it. Like, sure, it's cool. Sure. It's definitely cool stuff, but you know, if you can find it, fuck yeah, rock on. But yeah, Dying Designer is like it's a whole new thing. And
No. And I love that. And I love that you're purging the past and you're moving on, because you know, you talk a lot about a dark time that you went through. You know, you said you were living in Los Angeles, being successful, and you basically ended up living back in your parents' basement in Chicago, working a shit job, drinking a 12-pack a night, you know?
Yeah, it was so depressing, man. Fuck, like having to like, I had that, you know, career going real well for me. I mean, I was, you know, living off music for 3 years and things were going awesome, and then shit just hit the fan and I was like, fuck. So I moved back to Chicago, and I had money saved from, you know, the prior name and stuff like that. So I was like trying to figure things out, and I kind of started this Dying Designer stuff. But you know, after a few months, the money was getting tight, so I had to get a real job. And
yeah,
that shit was horrible. That shit sucked.
That's funny. There's something funny there, like a lead singer syndrome joke, you know, about a real job, but. But seriously,
it's so uninspiring too. And
right,
you know, like
right,
the way to get, you know, like drinking a 12-pack a night to like just being depressed and like, you know, wanting to create and like working fucking 8 hours and then coming home and trying to like put yourself in that mindset isn't necessarily the easiest thing. So like,
no, but you're a machine, you know, like you did it, dude, you know, like no, congratulations.
Yeah,
you're inspiring. Not just to other people that are listening to this that are doing that have to work those jobs and are trying to get music off the ground. You're inspiring to them, but you also should be inspiring to yourself, because you know what that was like, and and now you know where you're at. You know, just putting out your debut album that's absolutely killing it. So that must make you feel awesome when you think back to the struggle and the redemption that you have right now.
Yeah, I wouldn't change it, to be honest. Like, it did suck, and it was definitely like the worst years of my life, you know, with the relationship and the, you know, working like shitty job and like being broke as shit and like staying up super late in the studio and then having to go to work. Like, it all sucked, but I don't think this record would be as raw or personal if I really wasn't, you know, if it really wasn't my worst place. And so I'm grateful, and I'm grateful where I'm at now, and happy to be out of this situation and make something good out of it.
Well, you got some great material on the record, and you can definitely feel the pain, you know, in your voice throughout the whole thing. So,
fuck yeah,
you got something to show for it, dude.
Fuck yeah.
So the title, Nobody's Happy, doesn't get much more emo than that, I guess. Let's talk about that. Is that something that you believe? Is that just a kind of is that just your view on how people in this day and age kind of act?
Yeah, I mean, I just...
Is it a mindset? What is that?
Honestly, I just think, like, I don't know. I was super fucking depressed, down. You know, I deal with anxiety on a daily basis and a lot of different shit. But, you know, you see people and you look around and you're like, you know, people on Instagram and they like flaunt this like amazing, perfect life.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, it's all like, you know, like there's a lot of great stuff and people do great stuff. But at the end of the day, we do deal with different emotions on a daily basis, whether you're pissed off about this, you're stressed about this, you're happy about that. Like, happy is just one emotion, and you deal with multiple emotions on a daily basis. So really, at the end of the day, no one truly is happy, because there's plenty of shit going on. And, you know, there's like, it's hard to be content nowadays too with everything going on.
Right.
So that's another reason as well. Like, how many people do you know that they're like, yes, I'm truly happy, everything in my life is great? Because I can't name a single person.
Yeah, I know. I know what you mean. And, you know, I would say that maybe, you know, 10 years ago, something like that, I felt maybe I was happier. But it's weird, because I feel like that's just your memory of a time. You kind of... I think that us as people, like, it's kind of like when you go to a theme park, right? Like, you go to Six Flags with your friends, right? And you spend, yeah, like 80% of the time in line, in the fucking heat.
Exactly.
Hungry, like your stomach hurts. Like, you know, it's not great. But then, like, you look back 2 years later and you're like, oh, remember that time we went to Six Flags and we went on that ride and it was like so sick. And then, like, this happened and it was so funny. You, like, you kind of, your memory, I think, and it's probably a good thing, that your memory, like, seems to stick on to the things that make, you know, that you are memorable in that way. You know what I mean?
So
when you go back and you think back to things, you go, oh, that was like a really good experience. And the good old days, when, like, really right now is still the good old days. It's just the current. And I think that that's something I'm kind of constantly reminding myself about. I don't know if you would agree with that.
No, absolutely. Like, I'm much happier. I'm in like a way better place right now than when I, you know, was writing this album. And I'm not truly fully happy every single day. Like, I definitely have a lot more things that make me happy and I'm more stoked about, and, you know, way more positive things in my life. But I also do deal with shit, you know, like there's a lot of stuff that I'm like, fuck, this sucks. So I don't think I'll ever be happy, and I don't think anybody else in the world will be. And just because there's too much shit going on. You know, we got too much stuff, too much responsibility, and
too many fucking apps on the phone, man.
Man, way too
God,
many.
Like, I gotta like swipe and swipe and swipe just to find my banking app. Come on, there's gotta be a better way.
Yeah, man, I feel you. Too many apps.
So I want to talk about your experience working with Nick Mira on the track PTSD. That's a big deal, that dude.
Yeah, he's huge. He's massive right now. So
what did you take away from that experience?
Yeah, that happening so early on. We had 3 songs out.
Oh, yeah.
And there was the first one, Hoodie. You Stole My Hoodie. Then Lately in Girard Way. And... that's like a weird collab how that happened. Like Nick reached out to Paul, or Paul, I don't know, something crazy happened. And Nick was like, he really fucked with Lately Heavy.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing like a DM screenshot. Paul sent me, I think it was like Thanksgiving actually, when he sent me, it was Thanksgiving. He sent me like a screenshot of the like Twitter conversation. And Nick was like, yo, I really fuck with Lately. I want to work with Dying Designer. Let me send some beats over. He sent like 11 beats over. And, you know, one really stood out and PTSD was made. And it was cool though, but, you know, it happening so early on felt so good just because, you know, three songs out and working with one of the biggest hip hop producers in the game right now is fucking crazy.
Totally. I always feel like when you work with someone that's, you know, highly successful, you take something away from it, even if it's just like a confidence boost. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's been times when, for example, we went in the studio with Mark Trombino, who, you know, produced everything from Jimmy Eat World, Bleed American to Blink-182, Dude Ranch. Like, you know, and like, it wasn't so much the fact that I learned a lot from him or anything. It was the fact that I was like, okay, I'm on this guy's level. Do you know what I mean? Like, he might have an idea that's good. I might have an idea that's good or bad, or he might have an idea that's bad. It's like you start to realize that everyone is human.
Is exactly. You know what I mean? We're like, all
and you have the potential to be successful like that person because you're on the same wavelength as them. I think that that's something you can really take away.
Nick Mara just graduated high school this year.
Oh, really?
He's 18. He's had the. He's
oh, my God.
He's got so many gold and platinum plaques, like more than you would imagine. Like, it's crazy. Like, how many records he's done, you know, stuff with like X and Drake and Juice WRLD and Future. And like, the list goes on. The kid's worked with literally everybody in the game. And he's so young. So it's super inspiring. It's super inspiring. He was making these songs. He was going to high school every single day, coming home and making hit records, like the biggest hits you hear on the radio. He made Lucid Dreams. Like the biggest song of 2018. Fucking crazy. So it is very inspiring and it's super cool. And we are all human, you know, we all go through shit and, you know, just keep grinding away. And if you believe in something.
I had no idea that he was
18.
I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't know what the guy looks like or anything really. Like, I mean, you know, I just know his name and I know the stuff he's done.
He came to a Silverstein show.
Did he come?
In Vermont. He was at the Silverstein show. That's how Paul and him got linked up. Like, they
Vermont.
Started jamming or something.
That is random, dude. Wow. No, I don't. I'm a little bit out of the loop with things sometimes.
Yeah, this is crazy, though.
You know, like you said, there's too much going on. Too many apps. I can't keep track. That is crazy. Oh, my God. Wow. In fact, I almost feel now I have to take back what I said, because if this dude's 18 and killing it like this, maybe there's no hope for me.
yeah, that's funny, man.
I don't know, man. Oh, wow. So what else? I noticed you're not doing any shows. I know it's like a different thing, you know, for like traditionally, you know, you put out a record, you got a band, the four or five guys, you get in a van and you drive around America and you sell t-shirts and play shows. Like,
yeah,
it's a bit different for you. As a solo artist.
It's so different.
So how does that work? How does touring and shows and events work?
So, you know how we were talking earlier and you're like, oh, you got all these ideas already. Like, you were tracking memos for album two.
Yeah.
So since I'm not like out touring in a van or anything like that, I'm kind of fucking going crazy. I'm in my apartment. Like, I want to be playing shows. So I'm just like sitting writing songs constantly. So it's cool, you know, and it's like you can throw me in the studio now and I can come out with album two in like 2 weeks because I have so many ideas. But, you know, I think now that we have the album out, there's a lot of show opportunities and, you know, there's a potential European tour that might actually be happening in the fall.
Cool.
You know, can't really spill too much beans on it, but that might just be happening and I think is going to be crazy. And then I'm actually doing a headline LA show September 5th. So that's going to be sick.
Oh, nice. Okay. Awesome.
We haven't announced it yet, but we were supposed to announce it yesterday, but we're like, they're working on a flyer or something. So headline LA show September 5th.
By the time this comes out, I'm sure, well, it'll be out next week, but I think by the time it comes out, it'll be, people can check it out.
Yeah. So we've had like, you know, we've done festivals and we've done some legs. We did two dates on a tour in December and we played shows in Houston and Dallas. Like, we're definitely playing some stuff, but not as much as I'd want.
Right.
But I think it's all going to change real soon.
So and, do you tour, who do you collaborate with live? Like with Bodie?
Yeah.
Nick,
so
Nick Bodie of Hooligan fame. Yes.
Yeah. So Bodie plays guitar.
Yeah.
He runs it through a Kemper. And I fucking love the Kempers. They're so awesome because...
Man, they're insane. You could do anything.
It literally took like us having to be in a studio together. Like he can literally, like he has all his tones and everything, and he just sends stuff back and forth. And it comes out perfectly. And the crazy thing is like he can literally put the same tone like for like Devil's Calling. So it sounds exactly the same live that he uses. It's so cool. So he uses his Kemper. And then I have a DJ, Arjun, who goes by Egypt. He's super fucking cool. And he started DJing. I was like, he's a producer, but I was like, yo, I need a DJ. You want to like learn how to DJ? And he just was like, fuck yeah. And he learned and he's been crushing it. And so yeah, I tour with those two guys, a DJ and a guitarist. It's definitely different. I don't think it's ever been done that way, but I kind of like that it's that way.
No, I think it makes total sense. I mean, you need to have... like I think real organic guitar tones to get the right vibe. I mean, like I said earlier in a conversation, like the record, despite being whatever you want to call it, emo rap or you know, more on that side of things, the guitar and the vibe is extremely important. In fact, I'd almost call it guitar driven emo rap. You know what I mean? It's not driven and it's clean guitar, but it's still such an important part that I think to not have that.
Oh no,
it wouldn't work. Yeah.
He's a huge part and he's one hell of a performer. I mean, like, yo, you gotta check this out. So we did a show in Houston, sold out, and it's like, you know, 500 people there. It was crazy.
Nice, dude.
The crazy cool thing though, we crowd surfed like 3-4 times. Like it was nuts. We had like mosh pits going and, you know, just having Bodie and Arjun there really brought the extra energy and life to the room. And it was so fucking cool. Like it's like quote unquote, like an emo rapper with mosh pits, crowd surfing. Like we got breakdown. We got so much cool shit. And the live performance is like super fucking sick. And I can't wait till we get to take it, you know, worldwide and everyone gets to see exactly.
Totally. And you know, I wonder how much the music in the studio will start to change, you know, once you start playing live and you realize which parts of your music go off better live and how much of that becomes something that you want to incorporate. You know what I mean? That seems to happen with so many bands that they end up,
you learn so much.
Yeah.
Playing shows, absolutely. You literally learn so much. Like crowd reaction. You're like being in the studio, you're like, wow, the crowd's going to go nuts here. Or we're going to have them wave their phones here. Like it's so cool. You know, being the live experience, you can't take back. Like it's in that moment and that's it. Like you're in a room and everyone gets to have that vibe together. It's super fucking awesome.
Awesome. Dude, that's awesome, man. Okay. Well, thanks for taking the time to talk to me about all this stuff, man. Anything else to tell the people? The record is out now. Just came out. Nobody's Happy on Hopeless Records. You can get it on, well, just about anywhere. Is it on vinyl?
It may be releasing on vinyl. I keep getting a ton of DMs and shit, and I know it was brought up with the label, so like a while ago, so I'm not really sure. It might be.
I hope so.
And if it does, you know, whoever likes vinyl, cop it. And then maybe on tour we'll have physical copies. People keep DMing me like, I really want a physical copy. Like, so maybe we'll have physical copies on tour. Not really sure, but yeah, keep bumping. Nobody's Happy. Appreciate everybody. And, you know, keep sharing with your friends and, you know, come check us out on tour when we announce some dates. And fuck yeah, rock on. Thanks for talking to me, man. I appreciate it.
Of course, man. Big fan of yours. And you're just such a nice guy. So thanks for being sick.
Yours as well. But yo, check this out. I actually got something cool to talk to you about.
Okay.
Before we end this. So,
okay, sure.
I remember the first time I heard Silverstein. You ready for this?
Oh, I'm ready, dude.
I was like 9, maybe 10.
Oh my God.
My cousin, no, my cousin Jessica, she gave me a CD, like a mixed CD, and it had like literally all like the post-hardcore screamo stuff on there. and the first fucking song was smashed into pieces, and I was like instantly hooked.
There you go.
Instantly fucking hooked. So like growing up, obviously like early on, you know, I was watching all your guys' videos and all your albums. So it's crazy how, you know, the world works. Like now I'm friends with all you guys, and
yeah,
you know, Paul manages the project, and it's just super crazy how life is like full circle and things kind of all come back together. And, you know, a lot of the influence wouldn't come from a lot of my influence wouldn't come if I never heard any of this stuff as a little kid. So I'm super grateful for your art as well, man. So,
oh, thank you. That's really nice of you to say, man.
And you guys are still fucking killing it, dude. Like that new Burn It Down record is so fucking sick. I seen how many playlists you guys got in on that song. And yeah. I was like,
well, we got a good manager. And so do you.
Oh, yeah.
So
he's
that's
great.
That's the key. No, I mean, playlists.
Shout out PK. Shout out PK.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people, I think, you know, a lot of people are aware of it, you know, in the industry and stuff. But a lot of people just are probably casually listening to this. They don't realize how important playlisting is. You know, it's the new radio. You know, people throw on a playlist to find out about new music the same way they used to throw on FM radio. So that's really the way to get your music out there. So it's great to see you doing so well playlisting, and it's nice for, you know, old dogs like us to get some playlists too.
Fuck yeah. No, absolutely. You guys are killing it, and super stoked to be able to talk to you today, and hopefully see you guys soon.
Sure, man.
And much love, brother. Appreciate
absolutely.
It. Glad so, you like the album.
I love the album, but I want to ask you which song I should play for the people. I'm thinking maybe Pull It, the first track, but if you got a different one you want the people to hear, let me know.
Shit, yeah. I don't know. You could play Pull It, Wounds, or Lately.
Okay.
Either or.
Well, track one, two, or three. Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Pull It. We'll
fuck
kick
yeah.
it off right
now. Is that your favorite off the album?
I don't know. I don't know if it's my favorite. I really like the way the album starts. I like the energy of this one. I like how many times you say the F word. Big fan.
Yeah.
Big fan of the F word.
You're going to crack up about this. Someone like wrote a review and someone was like, he said fuck 32 times.
Someone counted?
Dying. Yeah, someone counted. Like props to the reviewer who counted. Like fuck yeah. Like said fuck 32 times apparently. So
there you go.
Fucking rock on.
All right. Well, the censored version would be really horrible for this song.
Oh my God.
A lot of
imagine
beeping.
Imagine the radio.
Well, dude, Bobby, thanks so much, man. And here's Pull It on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace of love. We'll see you next time.
Later.
Yeah,
peace,
take care,
guys.
Man.
I'm no good, I'm a fuck up. You're
there is Pull It by Dying in Designer, the first track off the debut record, Nobody's Happy. It's awesome. It's a great record. I don't care what genre of music you like. This is timeless stuff. This is great lyrics. This is great melodies. This is cool. And I want to thank Bobby so much for taking the time to chat with me. I hope he can do some shows because I want to see this guy live. This is all really, really awesome. I know every week I talk about the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. And right now I want to give a shout out to some of the top tier members for all their love and support. Thank you so much to Adam Hickok, Alyssa Lowe, Anthony Poplosky, Anton Appelrose, Eric Layton, Austin Amos, Brandon Drescher, Brandon Ray, Brianna Wolf, Brendan Potter, Caroline Kerouac, Christian Harris, Christina Bravo, Cody France, Cole Fenn, Connor Larson, Connor Lynch, Derek James, Andre Nielsen, Drew McDonald, Ethan Thompson, Fernando Parada, Feek Kazmat, Ford Wesson, Francisco Perez, Gabby Marshall, George, oh, I never know how to say your name, George, you know who you are, Gibson Devins, Ian Scott, not Scott Ian, Jesse Basso, Johnny Carell, my sly dog, Windsor's Finest, Mr. Josh Lowe, Julie Popelka, Caitlin Davis, Markham Ray King, Martin Jacobson, Matt Miller, Megan Marr, Melissa Gilroy, Mike Roberts, Nate Riley, Philip Fradkin, Rahel Schweiler, Rainer Ho, Rebecca Ferrero, Roger St. Pierre, Robert Scott Lewis, Roy Stino, Sarah Polis, Scott Ponce de Leon, I think I got that right, Stephen Dietrich, Stephen Olson, Tanya Kopchewski, Vin Nguyen, Wayne Jennings, Will Southard, and Zach Weissenberger. Thank you all so, so much for all the love and support. And if you want your name at the end of an episode, check out the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. Thanks again for listening. Peace and love. I'll see you next week on Wednesday.